Thank you. I'm very glad actually that Peter, you brought up this kind of information because this is kind of the core of my new research. And that's what I'll be discussing. I'll be discussing some of these issues of what's been happening in the post-Cold War period. An accurate understanding of the history of US relations with the Afghan Mujahideen is essential to understand international terrorism today. So what I'm going to try and do is attempt to condense this history very, very briefly to capture some of its most striking and significant features. And in doing so, I'm going to hope to demonstrate as fact a hypothesis that flies entirely in the face of the official narrative, that US relations with the Mujahideen selectively did not end with the Cold War, but on the contrary, have continued in many odd ways to this day in the post-Cold War era. And that this subtle hidden relationship contributes quite directly to the systematic undermining of national security through the inadvertent cultivation of the sources of international terrorism. So I won't talk about the formation of al-Qaeda as such. This is not going to be very interesting, since we all know that about the history of al-Qaeda, its formation at the behest of the United States and other Western powers in Afghanistan. What about beyond Afghanistan? Well, it's very interesting because after the departure of Soviet troops from Afghanistan and the collapse of the Soviet Union in about 1989, the anti-Soviet Afghan factions began competing for power. Although in 1991, the US and the USSR, they formally agreed to jointly cease aiding any faction in Afghanistan. In fact, the Department of State remained anxious about who might emerge as the winner of this competition within Afghanistan amongst the different factions. According to a Swiss TV journalist by the name of Richard Lebiviere, in his book Dollars for Terror, European intelligence sources that he cites revealed that the CIA and the Saudis, intent on securing a regime commensurate with their joint regional interests, agreed that they did not want to give up, quote, the assets of a profitable collaboration. Accordingly, in 1991, the CIA, Saudi intelligence, and bin Laden held a series of meetings. Although exactly what was agreed upon remained secret, Lebiviere, citing European intelligence sources, reports that the CIA remained determined to maintain some kind of influence in Afghanistan, which is, of course, the vital route to Central Asia, where the great oil companies are preparing, have been preparing, the energy El Dorado for the coming millennium. Labivier's findings are corroborated to some extent by other credible sources. We know for a fact that after the Soviet withdrawal, Osama bin Laden returned for a short period to Saudi Arabia to tend to the family construction business in Jeddah. But even after 1991, when Saudi security held on to bin Laden's passport, he had considerable influence in Saudi royal circles. He managed to lobby the Saudi royal family to organize civil defense in the kingdom and to raise a force from among the Afghan war veterans to fight Iraq. But the Saudi regime, they turned down his offer. Instead, they accepted the influx of 300,000 US soldiers. Now, according to the journalist Gerald Posner, as we know from NBC Today, this was the key point at which bin Laden decided to become an apparent enemy of the Saudi regime. But in April 1991, according to a classified US intelligence report, then head of Saudi intelligence services, Prince Turki Al-Faisal, struck a secret deal with bin Laden, despite his being under house arrest for his opposition to the presence of US soldiers. Under this deal, although the regime would publicly disown him, bin Laden was permitted to leave Saudi Arabia with his funding and supporters. Moreover, the regime would continue to fund his activities on condition that he does not target the Saudi kingdom himself. Now, Posner's account of a secret agreement between bin Laden and Saudi intelligence is significant because he argues that this was known to US intelligence. This wasn't something that we didn't know. Lebiviere also interviewed a CIA analyst about the role of the Mujahideen. And this CIA agent said, quote, that the policy of guiding the evolution of Islam and of helping them against our adversaries worked marvelously well in Afghanistan against the Red Army. The same doctrines can still be used to destabilize what remains of Russian power, and especially to counter the Chinese influence in Central Asia. Excuse me. So when I read this, I mean, I was quite surprised that could this really be possible? So I thought, how can we test this hypothesis? Why don't we have a look at these key regions, you know, Eastern Europe, the Balkans, Central Asia, and let's see if you can establish that some kind of connection continues to exist between the United States and al-Qaeda. And as Peter rightly pointed out, we know for a fact that in the Balkans, the United States twice connected themselves with Al-Qaeda. In the first Bosnian War, the Pentagon set up, and this has came up in a number of ways, I suppose the most credible source is the official Dutch inquiry, which produced a Srebrenica report a few years ago, and based on Dutch intelligence sources. The Pentagon was flying in Mujahideen into Bosnia to manipulate the direction of the conflict. To the extent that, I mean, Yusuf Badansky, who was director of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism, his outlet said that U.S. Special Forces were actually seen coming off planes with the Mujahideen. So this was a very close kind of coordination. The same kind of policy was implemented in Kosovo, as Peter noted. The KLA and the State Department confirmed in 1998 that the KLA has connections to Al-Qaeda. A man by the name of Ralph Mutschke, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, he's a head of a department in Interpol. He actually testified before Congress in the year 2000, and he confirmed the same thing, that we know for a fact that Al-Qaeda has been funded. Al-Qaeda has been funding the KLA. There is an intermovement of people in terms of Mujahideen. There is also movement of drugs and heroin and so on and so forth between these organizations. So there was a clear linkage there. At the same time, we know that before the Kosovo War, I mean, according to sources like the Sunday Times, the United States and Britain got involved, and we were training the KLA. The same people who, of course, were mingling with Al-Qaeda. And this is very worrying, because to go back to Badansky has pointed out that the Albanian mafia, which is tightly connected to the KLA, is laundering money, providing technology, safe houses, and other support to terrorists within this country, and, of course, within the UK. This is what he says. Badansky says, this isn't to say that the Albanians themselves would carry out the actual terrorist operations, but there are undoubtedly sleeper agents within the Albanian networks, and they can rely upon those networks to provide them with support. In any case, a serious investigation of the Albanian mob isn't going to happen because they're our boys, they're protected. Now, this phenomenon didn't just occur in the Balkans. I looked at a number of key regions. I looked at North Africa, and the countries in there I looked at were Algeria and Libya. I also looked at the Asia Pacific, and I looked at the Philippines, and several other. I looked at the Caucasus, I looked at the Russian-Chechen conflict, and I found a very odd pattern. And I'll just to give you an idea, I'll look at North Africa and Algeria. Now, in Algeria, we have a conflict going on, where we have a secular regime which is fighting a kind of a radical minority group, which is affiliated by numerous reports to Al-Qaeda. One of the main organizations, terrorist groups active in Algeria is the GIA, which has spearheaded a campaign in the country. They've slaughtered something like 100,000 civilians. It's very well known, documented by numerous human rights groups. Now, the same group which has carried out these massacres, numerous reports have emerged in the British press. Defectors from the Algerian intelligence services have come out on record, and they've stated that the GIA has been manipulated and penetrated by Algerian intelligence services and is being used to consolidate the regime's power. Now, this would be, I mean, we have a very close relationship to the Algerian regime, the United States, Britain, and Europe. We have very close ties due to the oil and gas there. We have very heavy investments. We also have very close military ties. Particularly the French government has very close military ties to the regime. The United States government has been involved with many new military programs with Algeria and so on and so forth. We're very tight with Algeria, and we do not want to damage this relationship. The problem arises when, is there a point where we have, is there any information which suggests that we are aware of the fact that this is going on, apart from the fact this has come out on the public record? Well, interestingly, there was a trial in the UK from which emerged various classified Foreign Office documents. And the trial was actually about the case of some Algerian terrorists or alleged terrorists in the UK. What emerged from these Foreign Office documents was that United States intelligence services and British intelligence services have been aware of this phenomenon for many years. Many reports talk about, there was this reported in the Guardian newspaper, by the way, many of the reports talked about the British reports saying that we are aware that we believe that the GIA has been manipulated by the Algerian secret services for their own ends. You know, we believe that the Algerian secret services are completely unscrupulous, and so on and so forth. The US intelligence report was there saying that the 1995 Paris bombings, which were blamed on Algerian militants, the GIA, we believe that probably at least one of the bombs was carried out when ordered by the Algerian secret services. And we do not have any evidence to suggest that the GIA actually carried this out, and so on and so forth. And I found that the same pattern was prevalent in the Philippines, very much similar. We had the Abu Sayyaf, a terrorist organization, which we must emphasize was heavily tied to 9/11. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, a mastermind of 9/11, was based in the Philippines, a member of Abu Sayyaf. It was in the Philippines that they hatched the Project Boyinka plan, which was the blueprint behind 9/11, as is now well known. It was hatched in 1995. It had two dimensions. One dimension was to blow up 11 airliners or so over the Pacific. Another was to hijack civilian planes and hurl them into key buildings in the United States. Now, the Abu Sayyaf, again, I looked at Philippine sources, Philippine newspapers. I went through the records, and I have a public address from a guy by the name of Senator Pimentel, who is a very prominent legislator in the Philippines. He gave a public address before the Philippine Senate, and he said, I have information that Abu Sayyaf has been handled by Philippine military intelligence. He even named officials who were working in the Philippine military at that time, and said, we need to investigate these people. He named one guy by the name of Edwin Angeles, who was supposedly a leader of the Abu Sayyaf. And he said that this man is actually a double agent. He's been an informant for years. And this subsequently came out. It actually emerged. It was a whole scandal in the Philippine press. And again, we have a very close relationship to the Philippine regime. I have a quote from a U.S. major there who was saying that we work here as counterparts. We have co-generals, co-directors. We have one troop for every Philippine troop. We're working very closely on account of this counter-terrorist offensive against what's happening. I don't want to go into detail, but I discussed this...
Because we don't have time.
Yeah, we don't have time. But suffice to say, in conclusion, that this is a phenomenon I've discovered to be prevalent throughout many regions in the Middle East and Central Asia. It's a very worrying phenomenon. And it fundamentally challenges the whole paradigm of the war on terror. That if we are allying ourselves in some manner with Al-Qaeda in this rather direct way, how can we fight a war and win? It just doesn't make any sense. The first thing we need to do is go to the source of our policy and correct that before we want to fight a war. And I would suggest that we need to look exactly at what we're doing in this respect before we go around invading other countries and saying that we're going to go and solve terrorism through military invasion.